Hey, American Hauntings fans, it's Troy. You've been hearing me plug our other podcast, Dead Men Do Tell Tales, which is available only on Patreon, for a few weeks now. I've told you about the two full seasons that are already available there, and I've been promising season three, and now it's here. Our new season is called Sinister, and it features the life and crimes of H.H. Holmes. That's a full season of Holmes' murder castle, the 1893 World's Fair, murders, swindles, all kinds of stuff. So become a supporter and check out that podcast at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. Because based on the reviews we've gotten after only two episodes of the new season, I don't think you'll be sorry. But for now, on with this show. Stories about young college co-eds are among the most terrifying in American history. They've been the source of our most chilling urban legends for decades. Of course, urban legends are notorious for being fiction with little connection to the truth, but as you'll often find, they got started for a reason, and often those reasons are because of things that actually did happen. But of course, that's not the only kind of fiction these stories inspire. In episode 13 of our last season, we presented the unsolved disappearance of a college girl named Paula Weldon, who vanished in the Green Mountains of Vermont. When author Shirley Jackson was looking for inspiration for her second novel, she found it in a missing person flyer for Paula that she saw posted to a tree. And Paula Weldon became Shirley's muse for her book, Hangs a Man. Another young co-ed found her way into a very different tale, one of true crime that became a movie called The Town That Dreaded Sundown. On June 1948, a young woman named Virginia Carpenter left her home in Texarkana, Texas, bound for the Texas State College for Women in Denton. But she never started those classes. Virginia was only 21 years old at the time of her disappearance. She was a pretty girl with a lot of friends, a bubbly personality, and the ambition to make something of herself. She'd recently enrolled at the Texas State College for Women and planned to become a laboratory technician. She previously attended Texarkana Junior College and had saved her money to continue her education. She dreamed of pursuing a career in laboratory sciences, but it was a dream that would never come true. She boarded a train in Texarkana on the afternoon of June 1st, bound for Denton, where she'd start summer classes. She got off the train in Denton and hailed a taxi, which took her to Brackenridge Hall, where she'd be living that summer. The cab driver, Edgar Ray Jack Zachary, later told police that he had arrived at the dorm around 9:30 p.m. When he pulled up out front, Zachary said two men in a convertible were parked nearby, and they called out to his passenger. Virginia seemed to know them and replied, "Well, what are you all doing here?" Virginia's traveling trunk had not yet arrived, so she paid Zachary a dollar to pick it up from the train station the following morning. She did have some suitcases in the taxi, but she told the driver that the two men would assist her with them. She said she knew them. Zachary said the three were talking when he drove away. Virginia gave him a smile and a wave, and that was the last reported sighting of her. You see, Virginia never checked into her dormitory that night. The next morning, Zachary picked up the trunk as he promised he would and dropped it off at the dormitory. The police later found it unopened, sitting by the front door. The identities of the two men who met Virginia outside the dorm remain a mystery. The only information detectives ever had about them was a description given by Zachary, who didn't pay much attention to them since Virginia obviously knew them. One was tall, he said. The other was short and stocky. Their car was cream-colored, but that was the best he could do. On June 4th, Virginia's boyfriend, Kenny Branham, contacted Virginia's mother and told her he hadn't been able to get in touch with her. Virginia's mother contacted the college and discovered that Virginia had never checked into her dorm and had not attended any of her classes. Well, in a panic, she called the police in Denton and reported her daughter missing. With nothing else to go on, the police focused their investigation on Kenny Branham and cab driver Jack Zachary. Well, Kenny not only had an alibi, but he passed a polygraph test. He insisted that Virginia wouldn't run away. She didn't have another boyfriend and no former lovers who might be jealous. He'd been the first to report her missing, and the police decided he wouldn't have alerted anyone about her disappearance if he'd been involved in it. With Kenny cleared, that left the cab driver, the last person to see Virginia alive, at least officially. In 1948, Zachary and his wife both claimed the taxi driver was home by 10 p.m. that night, and that Zachary went back to the hall the next day to drop off the trunk. In 1957, though, that story changed. Zachary's wife, who was by then his ex-wife, told the police that she'd lied at the time of Virginia's disappearance. She said he didn't actually come home until 2 or 3 a.m. She had no idea where he'd been. But Zachary was questioned many times during the investigation. Investigators always believed he was being cooperative. He passed multiple polygraph tests and was never charged. His ex-wife's 1957 statement to the police was never really given much weight. He passed away in 1984 and maintained he had no idea what had happened to Virginia. Well, in the weeks and months that followed the disappearance, alleged sightings of Virginia were reported all over South Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas. One of the few reports taken seriously came from a bus ticket agent in Duquesne, Arkansas, who claimed that on the night of June 11th, a young woman had gotten off a bus from Texarkana and sat down in the station's lobby. She matched Virginia's description. She seemed nervous, walked around, and asked about local hotels. A few minutes later, a man in his mid-20s with light brown hair came into the station, and the two of them left together. A short time later, the agent received a telephone call from an unknown woman. The caller, he claimed, asked if Miss Virginia Carpenter was in the station. Was it real or some kind of prank? Well, no one knows because this sighting, along with all the others, was never confirmed. By late 1948, the case had grown cold. There were simply no clues about where Virginia could have gone. In 1955, her family had her legally declared dead. Over the years, there were a few new leads, but the case was not completely forgotten. In 1998, the police received a tip from a man in his 70s who claimed not only to know who killed Virginia, but where her body had been buried. He claimed the two men who met her at the dorm that night had raped and killed her, then buried her. Well, police searched the alleged burial site, but no remains were found. The two suspects he'd named were both deceased, so their names were never released to the public. And there was one last thing, which may be just a coincidence, but it's worth mentioning. Virginia grew up in Texarkana, the scene of a murder spree in 1946 that's also never been solved. The murderer, dubbed the Phantom Killer, terrorized the region and has been the subject of books and films. While on the surface, those unsolved murders seem to have nothing to do with Virginia's disappearance 2 years later, but there is one intriguing fact that ties the two cases together. Virginia Carpenter knew three of the Phantom Killer's victims. Just a coincidence? Probably. But then again, not everyone believes in coincidence, so it's possible we'll never know what happened to Virginia on that night in June of 1948, any more than we'll know what happened to another young college girl who vanished in Ohio a few years earlier. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to our latest season, Gone, which is hosted and produced by Cody Beck and written and performed by Troy Taylor. That's me. America is a place that is filled with strangeness and unexplainable happenings. It's a place where tragic events occur and where mysteries exist for which no rational explanation can be found. Those mysteries include unexplained disappearances, just like the ones we've been discussing this season. We've been opening the files on people who have vanished without a trace, never to be seen again. Their stories are often bizarre, unexpected, and sometimes seem impossible. But one thing that we do know is that they did happen, and that these people simply walked out the door one day and never returned. Their stories have no conclusion. Their cases remain open. Their mysteries are unsolved. They are gone. But we won't allow them to be forgotten. This is episode 10 of our latest season, the story of a college co-ed who left her dorm room one day and was never seen again. On May 4th, 1937, Ruth Baumgartner was a 22-year-old enrolled at Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware, Ohio. The talented art major was only a few weeks away from her graduation and was starting to think about what direction her life was going to go next. She was happy, vivacious, and easy to get along with. She had a shy smile, blue-gray eyes, and blonde hair with an unusual white streak on the left side of her head. She was tall for a young woman in those days at 5'10". That meant she was often a few inches taller than most of the boys she knew on campus, but that never stopped them from talking to her or asking her on dates. But Ruth had no interest in college boys. She had a fiance back home, and no matter what some rumors would later claim, she simply had no interest in dating other boys. Her friends had never even seen her flirt with a boy at school. She was simply too busy. She wanted to finish school, start her career, and marry the boy she loved. That was the future she dreamed about, although tragically, it was one that would never happen. Ruth was last seen on the night of May 4th by some of her Tri Delta sorority sisters shortly before 11 p.m. She just returned to her dorm, Austin Hall, after choir practice and had changed into her pajamas. She had her hair in curlers and seemed like her ordinary happy self. The other girls would later recall she didn't seem to be under any kind of strain or stress. A little before midnight, Ruth said goodnight to her friends and closed the door to the room behind her. A few minutes later, the light that could be seen under the bottom of her door went out, and soon the entire dorm was silent. It seemed to be just another ordinary night, but this night would turn out to be anything but ordinary. At some point during the darkest hours of the early morning, Ruth Baumgartner would vanish, never to be seen again. In 1937, Ohio Wesleyan University was a small, very close-knit campus. When Ruth failed to show up for any of her classes the next day, missing a test she'd been studying for, some of her sorority sisters went looking for her. They knocked on her door, it was locked, and checked around campus at the places she liked to go or where she studied or had classes, but there was no sign of her. Finally, at almost 10:30 p.m., they alerted the campus police, who started an investigation. But Ruth's sorority sisters weren't content to leave things in the hands of security guards. They got organized and split up into groups, checking with local taxi companies at the railroad and bus stations and at all the hangouts they'd visited with Ruth around town. By the following day, the Delaware police were also involved in the search, and bulletins were sent out throughout Ohio and into neighboring states. The disappearance was covered in newspapers and in radio broadcasts. Ruth's description was printed on signs and posters and repeatedly went out over the airwaves, but there was no sign of her. A massive volunteer search was carried out in Delaware. Hundreds of people walked the streets and alleyways. They checked old buildings, farmhouses, henhouses, and outhouses all over the county. They searched the old stone quarries that had filled with water and had become popular as swimming holes with local students. But they failed to turn up any trace of the young woman. Unfortunately for everyone involved, the mystery of her disappearance only deepened as detectives began looking into the hours just before she vanished. Someone, the police assumed Ruth herself, had placed her dorm key on a ledge that was in the back corner of the Austin Hall staircase between the second and third floors. Her red Dodge convertible, an early graduation present from her parents, was in its regular parking spot in the garage, but the key had been left in the ignition. Had it been driven somewhere by Ruth or by someone else and then returned? No one knew. Ruth's dorm room was in perfect order, which in itself was a little unusual, since Ruth was usually fairly messy. Her watch and her sorority pin, two items that she always wore, had been left on top of her dresser. The pajamas and robe her friends had seen her wearing the night before were hanging in the closet. Her bed was untouched. Either she hadn't slept in it or she carefully made it before she left. Her alarm clock had been set for 6 a.m., the same time she got up every day. but it had been switched off. Either it had never been set at all, or Ruth had been there to turn it off at 6 a.m., had gotten up, dressed, and left the dorm without anyone seeing her. The police asked her closest friends to look through her closet and see what might be missing. That way, they'd have some idea of what she'd been wearing when she left. One of her handbags was gone, as were a brown suit, a hat, and brown lace-up ghillie shoes, which were like ballet slippers made from leather and tied like an athletic shoe. The clothing was added to her description, but this didn't generate any fresh leads. After the police failed to find anything solid to move the investigation forward, they began to speculate, and so did everyone else. Soon, rumors were flying all over town. The initial theory pushed by the police, and one that Ruth's frightened parents were quick to go along with, was that she had suffered an attack of amnesia and was wandering somewhere on the back roads of Ohio. One of her friends had mentioned to detectives that she'd seemed stressed lately, worried about whether she had all the credits she needed to graduate, and this seemed to be echoed in a letter she'd recently written to her father, Carl, in which she wrote, "I have to do so many things that I don't know how I'm going to get them all done. I am extremely tired." Well, looking back on this now, it seems to be the same feelings experienced by just about every college senior when graduation nears. There's nothing to suggest that Ruth's stress was out of the ordinary. Only one of her friends mentioned this stress. Everyone else agreed she was her usual easygoing self. Ruth's father and likely the police were just looking for anything that made sense. And then there's the amnesia. Now, let me go off on a tangent here and mention how rare genuine amnesia is in real life. We've all heard of it, though, and we all know what it is, but that's mostly because it's shown up so many times over the years in movies and television shows and books. I mean, it's kind of like quicksand. Based on how often I saw it while watching TV as a kid, I really thought I was going to need to worry about quicksand a lot as an adult. Well, I kind of felt the same about amnesia. You know, a bump on the head or some other kind of trauma was going to make me lose my memory. You know, until I got hit again and remembered who I was. But if amnesia was a silly theory, why was it the first thing that the police, Ruth's parents, school administrators, and even her friends thought of when nothing else made sense? Well, why not? With so many people in Hollywood films at the time suffering from amnesia, it seemed plausible. There were at least 60 movies that had amnesia plot lines in the early days of silent films, more than 40 in the 1920s, and another 50 by the time Ruth disappeared in 1937. Amnesia is rare in real life, but man, it happens in Hollywood a lot. And not only movies. It's been the plot of books, magazine stories, and comic books for decades, even though doctors could tell you that writers rarely presented amnesia accurately. It was more important for entertainment that amnesia moved the plot along. It didn't matter if the symptoms were accurate. It was a plot device used so the characters didn't know who they were or what they'd done. It created humor and tension, but I think we can all agree there's nothing funny about the plight of Ruth Baumgartner. The suggestion that the young woman had amnesia, which was a plot twist right out of a melodrama, did nothing more than throw the investigation even further off the track. Even though her friends and family wanted nothing more than for Ruth to wake up and realize who she was at some point, the amnesia explanation didn't work with the clues that finally started to accumulate as the search continued. Calls flooded the police station's telephone lines, and while many of them came from the usual nuts, cranks, and lunatics, there were also a number of eerie reports that were taken seriously. Like one from Mrs. Wilmer Smith, who lived near the Ohio Wesleyan campus. Between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. on the morning of May 5th, she heard three blood-curdling screams coming from the direction of the school. She said they sounded like the cries of a woman in terror. A report came in from a barber in Worthington, Ohio. He claimed to have seen a woman matching Ruth's description around noon on the day she disappeared. He said the young woman was pacing back and forth on Grandview Road and distinctly recalled she'd been wearing a brown suit. That same day, two women reported seeing Ruth in Zanesville. It was late morning, recalled Mrs. Edward Heil and Mrs. R.A. Eric, and she was hitchhiking, but she wasn't alone. A young man was with her, and he looked like he was around Ruth's age. perhaps another college student. H.B. Matthews, who worked in a signal tower for the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad in Grafton, reported seeing a girl who matched Ruth's description hitchhiking alone in the afternoon of Thursday, May 6th. Several days later, traveling salesman Joe W. Smith stopped at the closest police station and reported he'd given a ride to a young man and a girl who looked like Ruth. In fact, he was sure he'd heard the man call her Ruth. He picked up the pair in Nashville on May 7th and dropped them off later that day in Memphis. Well, predictably, as happens in every missing persons case that gets any kind of publicity, there were sightings of Ruth all over Ohio and Pennsylvania, New York, Tennessee, California, New Mexico, and, well, pretty much all over the country. The sightings were checked out as well as could be managed, but each one was eventually dismissed. They all turned out to be a young woman mistaken for Ruth, people looking for attention, or those who were simply unhinged. Even so, some of the sightings would have an effect on the case. How? Well, they give the police an excuse to call off the frustrating search for the missing girl. The authorities looked bad. If they couldn't find a 22-year-old college girl, then how could they solve a serious crime when one came along? It was the sightings of Ruth, or at least a girl who looked like Ruth, with a young man that bothered the cops and got the gossip mill running at full steam. If Ruth had skipped town to be with a boyfriend, then why was everyone looking for her? She'd obviously run away on her own. But was there any truth to this? Well, no one had even proven that the girl with the young man was Ruth. They were simply random sightings for people who didn't know her. To the police, though, it seemed to be the logical conclusion to the case. They didn't outright stop looking for Ruth, but they certainly put the brakes on the investigation. As Ruth's friends and families would argue, though, Ruth would never do what the police were suggesting. She was serious about school. Graduation was only a few weeks away, and besides that, she was happily engaged to Harry Bud Moore, who'd been her boyfriend for years. He was back home in Lakewood, Ohio, worried sick about his fiancée. He spent every spare hour with Ruth's parents, Carl and Emma, trying to keep up with the search for Ruth. Ruth's sorority sisters disputed the claim that Ruth had run off with a boy. They'd never known her to date anyone other than Bud. If she'd been seeing someone else, they stated, they would have known about it. Besides, one of them said, Ruth wouldn't have had more than a few dollars in her purse when she vanished. That was hardly the amount of money needed to disappear and start a new life somewhere. Well, the arguments made sense, but there was no question. The police had run out of leads. Ruth had simply vanished. When she left Austin Hall that morning, she might as well have just dwindled away like the shadows did when the sun rose over the campus that day. But her heartbroken parents refused to give up. They hired the famous Burns Detective Agency to pursue the case. The experienced operatives chased down alternative theories, trying to discover if Ruth had any enemies on campus. Had she ever been threatened or followed? Did anyone want to hurt her? They returned to every hospital and morgue in the region, checking again for unclaimed bodies or Jane Doe patients, but found nothing. Ruth's father was a wealthy businessman. Could Ruth have been kidnapped, possibly for ransom? Well, if she was, no ransom note was ever received. In the end, the Burns detectives failed just as badly as the police had. They failed to turn up any convincing evidence about the fate of Ruth Baumgartner. All attempts to find the missing co-ed eventually came to an end. All these years later, we still have no idea what happened to Ruth. Her story remains one of the most baffling and heartbreaking in my file cabinet of missing people. No one deserves to disappear, but there are certainly some who go missing about which we can't express much surprise. Perhaps they had people in their life who wished them harm, or they were involved in something criminal, or they simply lived life on the edge, and eventually they just fell off it. But none of those things fit Ruth, or Virginia Carpenter for that matter. They seem to be two young women who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and vanished forever, never to be heard from again.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? And I don't mean like spells or incantations to trap spirits, you weirdos. I mean like a new language that could help you start communicating with more people on this plane today. Then I need to tell you about Rosetta Stone. Look, you know the brand, you know the name. They have the expertise and a 30-year legacy, which makes them more qualified than ever to help you learn a new language today. They've helped millions of people build the fluency and confidence to speak new languages. Now, this is the part where Troy would tell me that I made some kind of grammatical error, but he's not here right now, so like, I don't know, it's like speaking tongues. Rosetta Stone focuses on speaking practice for real-life scenarios to get you ready for real conversations with real people. Or maybe you can even learn how to use some different types of Ouija boards. I don't know. Either way, Rosetta Stone can help you learn faster and retain your new language better. Honestly, Rosetta Stone really would have come in handy for season 4 of New Orleans because I know we butchered some of those French names, and I apologize once again. Now, you all know I have a 9-to-5 job when I'm not at the podcast factory, and Rosetta Stone actually helped me not make a total fool out of myself while I was in Brazil interviewing celebrities. Obrigado. And now I want to help you. So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, American Hauntings podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. Rosetta Stone, how language is learned. Wait, by the way, Troy, like, where do words come from? Hey, no, don't walk away. Oh, Troy, where do words...
There's one thing that the American Hauntings podcast knows about, and that's mothers. We featured a lot of great mothers in a lot of our episodes. Pearl Curran, Julia Lemp, Sarah Moore, Marie Laveau, Jane Mansfield, Tamsin Donner, Delphine LaLaurie, Belle Gunness. Okay, maybe leave out those last two. But what I'm saying is that with Mother's Day coming soon, you need a truly special gift for your mom because, well, she's not Belle Gunness. So let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that literally turns your mom's life story into a book. So here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your mom a question in her email, the same way she sends you questions about your dating life or when you plan to give her grandkids. Anyway, these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. She replies by either typing in the answers or by recording her own voice. Then MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a keepsake book, and they can create an audiobook that uses her voice recordings, preserving her voice and her stories forever. As anyone who doesn't have their mom around anymore can tell you, having your mother's stories about growing up, being a kid, and overcoming life's challenges will be something that you and your kids will treasure. And let's be honest, your mom has given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a very cool way to share them. Honestly, I decided to try this out for myself, and I sent it to my mom, and she's not exactly a whiz at computers, but she still found it really easy to use. My mom might have had a little more unusual childhood than a lot of mothers do, so I'm really glad to have this, and I think you'll be glad to give one to your mother, too. So check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS for 10% off today. All right, well, let's do this one. So
all right,
be good to go. So
let's do this. All right, well, thanks for returning for more episodes of the American Hauntings podcast, where we discuss history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. This is season 7 of the podcast, which we call
Gone.
That was pretty good. Yeah, I like that. I'm your co-host Cody Beck.
I'm taking a little inspiration from you.
Yeah, as my little
musical styling.
Is my metal co-host, author, historian. Viking metal. That'd be good for you.
Yeah, there you go.
Prime Buff, the founder of American Hauntings, Troy Taylor. I like that one. That was good.
Oh, good. Well, good.
We'll see how it comes out in the mix.
Yeah, probably not well.
You should have seen when Troy did that. Actually, flame shot up from behind him.
I know. It was as there were, you know, pyrotechnics, the whole bit.
Yeah, so, it was awesome. Yeah. Oh, dude. What's going on? Oh, you can actually. OK, can I start off telling you something I was thinking about earlier?
Sure.
I was listening to Doughboys, a podcast I love. And they do this. They do a couple like tournaments every March, I think, where they did something with every McDonald's item, or like they'll do like a sandwich restaurant tournament mm-hmm. stuff. And they did this McDonald's one, and it's like it's probably like a whole 6-episode sort of thing between like Patreon and the full episodes. And right as their final episode to launch the championship launches, that's when the lockdown happened. And so they had to go from always doing episodes in person to doing them over Zoom and mm-hmm. remote. And they always said that they would never, ever do that. You know, they always had people in the studio or whatever. They're like, yeah, sure. We just don't want to do remote stuff. And now that's mostly what they do. But what I was thinking about is how that last episode of their tournament, the very first episode they did remote, it's so awkward and terrible and hard to listen to because none of us knew what we were doing. It was so hard.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that probably the first couple of times probably you and I did it, it was probably sort of similar.
It's terrible. Yeah.
And now think about how much better and easier this feels, I know. It's so weird. I don't know. We just
didn't. But they also all sounded terrible, too. Everybody that was doing that sounded awful. And that's changed. Everything is, you know, better. And I'm not even talking about just our sound. I mean, just
right.
Everyone in general. I mean, the quality of all that stuff has improved so much.
Yeah. I just thought it just reminded me because I was just talking about how, I see the flames pop up on Zoom.
And, right.
Yeah. But anyway, aside from devilish things happening in your background, what's been going on with you, man? What's up?
Not much. Just coming off of Memorial Day weekend. So, which yes. really... I don't really do much for that one.
I'm gonna eat hot dogs and sausage.
I worked yesterday. I mean, I worked all weekend. I had events this weekend, so you know, and came back home and I'll throw something on the grill tomorrow. That's gonna be, you know, as far as celebrating, other than just the, you know, respecting the holiday. But
of course,
celebrating wise, that's really all I'm doing. I'm trying to get through these last few events before the conference.
Yeah.
That's all. So I was had a meeting with the conference people at the venue and everything. So I had a lot of stuff on the mind over the weekend. So
does Lewis and Clark, do they know what they're getting themselves into? Do they know what to expect?
I think so. I met with the Brian that runs the Hathaway Cultural Center where the event will be. And, you know, he's very easygoing about everything. He just had questions. How did I want this? How do I want that? And, you know, so it's going to be easy. It's going to be good. You know, we've got a lot of space there. It's really going to be a nice spot. So
the campus still look all beautiful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a nice campus. So yeah. And we can, there are lots of parking, you know, it's just going to be, it's going to be good. I'm excited about it. I'm it's going to be a lot of fun. But I'm now getting keyed up about it. So it's, you know, but you know, I still have a couple of events. I got a tour that's sold out and I got an Edgar Allan Poe dinner and a St. Louis exorcism dinner before the conference. So that's all I have to get through at this point. So
you're so close.
Yeah. Everything else is dealing with the conference and then, you know, we'll go after that. But if you're thinking, hey, I'd like to go see Troy when he's getting ready to spin out before the conference and hear him talk about those things, you can go to dinnerinthespirits.com. And if you are interested in the conference, but I'm going to keep hammering that on you. It's getting too close now. You're either coming or you're not. So, you know what I mean? I mean, we got less than a month to go and we don't even have that many tickets left that we're selling. So we'll see what happens. The cutoff is going to be, I believe, June 16th. So any tickets we have left, those are the only ones we'll sell in advance. If there's anything left after that, we'll sell them at the door, but they'll cost more. So you might mm-hmm. as well get them in advance. So anyway, ghostconference.net, June 23rd, 24th, 26th annual Haunted America Conference. It's going to be fun. So
26 years, man.
I know it.
Or I guess, is it 27 years?
Than you are.
So. Is it 27 years with 20
No, this
skip?
Is 26.
Okay.
This is number 26. Well, it would be 27 if it wasn't for COVID.
Got it.
This is 26.
So. Yeah, geez. Yeah, no, but seriously, I was, what, 5 when you started doing this? Dang. Yeah.
I know.
Man, imagine how much cooler I would have been if my parents had started bringing me to those when I was five.
I know, so blame them. So,
I blame them for,
for so many things right? Yes, we both. I don't blame your parents, I blame mine. But
I was going to say, so. Troy blamed my parents for
your parents have never done anything to me, so,
You remember Dead of Winter when I was like, did I tell you I invited my mom?
Yeah, I do remember that.
And you're like, is she here? I was like, no, she said no.
Yeah.
I'm actually Troy, I'm going on like a, we're doing like a mother son like day tomorrow. I'm gonna pick her up because she doesn't like driving in Missouri. I'm gonna go pick her up, and
of course not.
And you know what, yeah, and yeah. She's never been to my apartment. I've lived here for 5 years.
So are you serious?
I'm serious. So I'm gonna show her my apartment for the first time ever, and we're gonna drive around Alton and check out just like the old house, and she'll tell me some things about my dad and her and this and that and the other. And then we're gonna go to my sister's house because they're having like a barbecue. That's why I said I'm just gonna eat a bunch of sausage and stuff.
Yeah
play with my new nephew, and maybe I'll see if I can get him like I'll make him like a podcast onesie or something.
Yeah, with like a pentagram on it or something.
Yeah,
for your mom. So
yeah, for my mom and my Mormon side of that.
Yeah,
they'll all love it. I'll put it right on the little flap though, so when they do his diaper, you know. Okay. Well, anyway, I'll be done being weird. Okay, we got a nice listener review. This one is from Tyler Hags, and it's just titled "Highly Recommend!" 3 exclamation points. It says, just recently found this podcast and can't stop listening. Makes my workday go by so much faster. I usually stop listening to a podcast when I get off work, but I catch myself still listening on my way home too. Well, great. I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
What do you normally do on the way home? Do you sit in silence? Are you one of those? Or
maybe listens to music.
You know, that's probably a more likely scenario than what I jumped to. But thank you, Tyler, so much for the review, and we really appreciate it. And anytime we can help people get their workday done faster, the only thing that scares me is like we've had some people talk about they have like really important jobs, and they're like, this is a distraction. And I'm like, don't do that.
Please don't do that. Especially if it's heavy machinery or something.
Yeah, if you're a surgeon.
Sharp, you know, involved.
Yes, but Tyler, as long as you're being safe, all the more power to you. Okay, so Troy, we're going to talk about one of my favorite things in the entire world.
College girls.
I knew that was coming. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I might be predictable, but I'm also consistent. They're not even one of my favorite things. June 1948. So college co-eds and urban legends. We've talked about this a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just like a refresher. I know I've kind of asked this before, but were a lot of these things just used as like a Santa Claus sort of thing to keep people
I think they were those types of things to, you know, make sure that you didn't go out at night, that you, you know, called and checked in, that you didn't go out with the wrong people. You know, they're cautionary tales of what can happen to you when you go away to college, you know, and something bad happens if you're not careful. So I mean, I think that's you know, how the urban legend began, but like we said, a lot of those got started for a reason. You know, I mean, there really are lots of stories about, you know, co-eds and bad things that happened to them, but unfortunately there are real stories too. And this is a case of a couple of them who just disappeared. So,
yeah.
And this is not the first one we've covered. I mentioned that too. We talked about Paula Weldon back in the, you know, last season. And the disappearance on the Long Trail and all that stuff. And that was, I think, more of an episode about that area than it was about Paula. But still, she played a pretty important part in the story. I mean, that's what got that particular story so much attention, was her disappearance. And so she had some fairly well-connected parents, kind of like Ruth will later in this episode. So
yeah. And we'll get to Ruth in just a second. Yeah. And I'll have so many questions, but Virginia Carpenter leaves Texarkana for college, never actually makes it to class, wants to be a lab tech. The taxi driver, so she takes a train and a taxi. The taxi driver's name, I like his name because I could just say it, Edgar Ray Jack Zachary.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Bounces.
Yeah, I don't know where the Jack came from. Edgar Ray Zachary, but he went by Jack, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. That's was the name he went by.
Hey, so. You know what? I don't question. Yeah. Charlie used to say, like, yeah, my name's Chuck. They call me Charlie for short. And just like, yeah. It's like, you know what? Just don't question people's names. Yeah, whatever. So basically she goes missing. Allegedly, the cab driver says that there were two men waiting for her, or not maybe waiting for her, but happened to be there or waiting for her.
Yeah. And coincidentally, I'm sure since she knew them, right?
Yeah. So she knew them. And immediately when they asked him, the cab driver, you know, about what was going on with all this, I think the fact that he couldn't really describe either of the men made me think he wasn't lying, like he didn't set it up, because
yeah, he just didn't pay any attention.
Yeah, because I feel
that's
like
what I thought too. Yeah,
if he was lying, he'd have more details.
I think the story, the change up of a story was just an ex-wife with an axe to grind,
really. Yes,
and I think that's what the cops thought too, because they didn't really pay much attention to it. But
yeah
I mean, if he'd had these this long detailed description of these
right.
two guys.
A scar on his right arm.
What's the deal here? You know, but he's like, I don't know. She knew him. So I didn't pay any attention.
One was tall, one was short.
Like, yeah. That was all I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, hell hath no fury, as you, as you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So police eventually get a tip in 98, but the two suspects that they have been told about are dead. They can't find this alleged grave. You said Virginia Carpenter also knew three of the Phantom Killer's victims.
Yeah. That's a story we've never really gotten into, but, you know, we might do something about it at some point.
Okay.
Because it's a really interesting story, but I mentioned the movie version of it, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, which was made like in the 70s, and it's definitely the time period.
Okay.
You know, it's rough. One thing I can say about it is one of the stars or one of the actresses in the film is Marianne from Gilligan's Island.
Oh, now you have my attention.
That, not a lot of people I really remember from it, but it's kind of done in that pseudo documentary style that they did a lot of back then, you know, Texas Chainsaw, all that kind of feel to it. And that's how this is too. And then they did a remake of it, which was interesting because when they did the remake, it wasn't really a remake. It was almost like a sequel because the original film played a part in the next movie. They were showing it at the drive-in when, you know, the killer attacked somebody.
But interesting. Okay.
It is an interesting story. And like I said, it is something that I hope that we can do something with at some point because it's never been solved. You know, there have been some suspects named, but nobody's ever solved the murder. So maybe that's something in a future thing that we can do, but
yeah.
You know, in a nutshell, I mean, you know, look it up. I mean, just give it a look.
Do you want to spoil anything?
We don't have to get into all of it. It's something that people can easily look up. I usually do a post of the anniversary of at least one of the murders. I do a Facebook author page post about the murders, the Moonlight Murders. They knew him by that. There was a couple of different names for the murders, but
didn't we do Moonlight?
No, that was something. That's a different one.
Okay.
That was something I gave that a name.
Okay.
It was something different, but, we did, that was our first season of the Patreon podcast. It was called The Moonlight Murder, just
murder.
And it was a whole different thing. But, but speaking of that, I got to remember this. So I don't forget to tell you, I have a copy of the collected short stories of Ambrose Bierce for you. I found it this weekend.
Aww.
So I have a copy. I'll give it to you when I see you at the conference or something.
Thanks,
so,
man.
Yeah, I grabbed it and I said, I'm going to get this for Cody because there's good stories in here. So
thanks, man. That's awesome. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah. But so that has nothing to do with this episode. But
yes, you know, of course. Yeah.
I just remembered it as we were talking about things that we can look up. Aww. So yeah, it's worth taking a look, you know, because it is an interesting story and it just sort of leaves things hanging. But, you know, I always thought it was interesting that she knew, you know, knew well three of the victims, you know, so if there was a connection between all those victims, and that's the jury's out on that one, because nobody knows for sure if that was something that was all connected or if it was just random murders that happened in Texarkana. The fact that she knew three of them and then disappeared without a trace not that long afterward, it's weird. I mean, maybe there's no connection, but it's still odd.
It's something that a police officer, an investigator wouldn't ignore.
No, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe it's coincidence. I'm surprised you haven't. Have you ever thought about writing about this and that? And
I've thought about it. So it's something that may be, you know, down the road. So I don't
20
know.
Books down your list or
yeah,
something?
I don't know. I do have a large list, but Now I have a large list and another going list of future seasons of the Patreon podcast.
Oh, hell yeah.
So yeah, I've already got the next two planned. So this is, we're only on episode 2 of H.H. Holmes. Actually, has 2 even gone up yet?
No.
Yes. Yeah, we put 2 out, right? Mm. Yeah, that was last week. Last 2 week was part 2.
You're right. 2 was last week. And then, sorry, it's all getting muddled with when we record. Yeah, I know. With I
Alton, everything mixed in. So with 3 podcasts going, gee, go figure.
Yeah, so, I finally started whiteboarding it out like you did to kind of keep myself. And also like you have to like write stuff and get things sent to me and record that stuff. And then I'm doing outlines and I'm doing ads and stuff. So I'm like trying to balance out, like
trying
this
to
is where this
out.
Is going.
Yeah.
And
well, at least we don't have to record anything else with the Patreon ones. So at least that lets that off your plate. You just have to edit it, but you don't have to like get on.
So
that at least helps.
That's the best thing. And I've pretty much just dedicated now, like Sundays need to just be my podcast everything day, which is fine.
Right?
I just have to like accept that because I like pushed like, let's do all these things.
It's all your fault then.
So, you were just as down to.
Oh, I know.
Something I wanted to. I put this down as a note to remind myself, but I thought it would just be nice to say to you and to say to our listeners and stuff again is I think that with some of this, I don't want to say I've gotten too comfortable, but I want to remember again that I want to focus on the victims and make sure people remember their names, especially if they're lost to history.
Sure.
And only poke fun at the things that I'm supposed to be able to poke fun at. I think it's just a good reminder to talk, not that I've been making fun of victims or anything, but I want to make sure to say their name, say that we're talking about this because they're gone. We want to remember them. And then if there's anybody that's guilty, then I'll drag them through the mud and that'll be fine. But I made a note of that yesterday, just be like, man, I want to make sure I don't get too far away from this. And so with that, let's dive into the larger story of this, which honestly is not going to be too long, but it's something we got to definitely talk about. So Ruth Baumgardner, May 4th, Star Wars Day, 1937, Delaware, Ohio, this is such a weird one. She's about to graduate, has a fiance back home, doesn't really seem interested in other things. I know people can like lead secret lives, or like my friends have like secretly dated someone with no one knowing. And then I'm like, what the hell? You know,
I know. But this is just so odd because she, you know, people knew her and they knew her well. I mean, she's living in that sorority and those girls were all, you know, in this time and place, were all very close
in each other's business.
Yeah, they were. And because, I mean, they like, became detectives. I mean, they didn't even the cops. They
I love
went
that.
Out and started looking on their own because they just weren't going to wait any longer. But, you know, I mean, she was someone who would have been very noticeable at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I made a note that she was 5'10", which in, you know,
that's
that
tall.
Time period, you know, in the 1930s, that's tall for a woman.
Right.
You know, and, you know, she had blonde hair with a white streak on one side of just very, very light blonde hair. And I mean, people would have remembered her if they had seen her.
Of course.
That's the thing. And, you know, she was just trying to knuckle in and get through the last few weeks of school. She's almost done, probably just almost a finals week. And the fact that she would just walk off on her own, that didn't sit right with anybody that it was suggested to. They just didn't buy it. Her friends didn't buy it. Her family didn't buy it. Nobody did.
Can I ask? I don't know if it's a controversial question, but it's something just it popped into my head. Like, do you think she was going away to take care of an unwanted pregnancy or something that randomly happened?
I really don't. I suppose it's possible. I mean, there's no way we can know anybody's secret.
Yeah, you know, I just know we've talked here, about but, things like this.
Well,
like,
but I
around
think
then.
That yeah, we have, but her behavior leading up to her disappearance doesn't seem to make sense.
Okay,
you know what I mean? I mean,
she
was had every intention of going to class the next day. I mean, she was up late in the evening with her friends and went to bed. And, you know, and no one, everybody said, oh, well, you know, they didn't seem like there was anything wrong with her. They didn't seem like there was anything bothering her. Mm-hmm. I mean, she seemed just fine. And now, you know, she's just gone. So, I mean, I suppose it's possible. I mean, I don't think we can rule out anything since it's unsolved, but it just doesn't seem likely.
It's not high up on your list.
Everything else in the story. Yeah, I wouldn't, right. I wouldn't put it very high on the list. But what was she doing out? I mean, it's obviously no one came to her room and grabbed her and carried her away because there was no signs of anything out of the ordinary. I mean, you know, I mean, her bed was made or, you know, things were hanging up.
Wasn't
in fact,
that
her room was neater than usual, so, that her friend said. But
wasn't that out of the ordinary?
Well, I suppose. But I mean, really, she could have just straightened up her room and her friends just always knew she was a mess.
Yeah. You know, she does it once a month or whatever.
Yeah, that's that doesn't, I mean, I don't think that's a huge red flag of any kind. But so, I don't know, man. It isn't like anybody dragged her out. So she probably went out. But you know, her key was in the car, which was odd, but it was in its usual spot. She could have gone somewhere, come back, somebody grabbed her. It's hard to say.
I get some clarification on something too? Yeah. So she or someone locks her room door and then leaves the key in a stairwell?
The keys behind. Yeah. On a shelf in the stairwell.
Okay.
I no one knows why. I mean, I said presumably Ruth, because who else would have had her keys?
Right.
But yeah, that is odd too. I mean, that's another odd thing that's out of the ordinary.
Huh.
But left her key in the car.
Yeah. You
know? Weird.
It's so, yeah. Yeah. And she didn't, yeah. You said, as soon as you said, like, she mentioned, like, they said, oh, she was very tired. And I was like, yeah, that's every college kid. And
that, we're like, finals, you know, or almost finals time. Yeah. It's, I mean, that's normal. So
yeah, and then amnesia, and then dissociative fugue disorder happens, but it's very, very rare.
Yeah, it's really rare. And I couldn't help but, you know,
you got to talk about it.
Go on a tangent there.
Yeah,
you have to. It's funny.
Yeah,
I mean, not the story isn't funny, but amnesia is. Well, I'm sure it's not funny to people it happens to, but man, I couldn't even begin to count how many movies and TV shows and.
Yeah.
Cartoons I watched as a kid where people had amnesia, soap operas.
So
people always have amnesia. You know, they can't remember anything, and suddenly it all comes back once they get hit in the head again. So,
yes.
And I use the comparison with quicksand,
uh-huh.
which I was sure. You know, I mean, I knew how to get out of quicksand. I mean, that was something that I'm well aware of.
What are you supposed to struggle? Stop struggling.
Never struggle and try to.
Why float, do I know that?
You know, what? I know. See, that's my point. We all thought we were going to really, that's information we needed to know.
Right.
You know, and like, I also knew which cactuses that you could cut open that had water inside.
Oh, I don't know that.
I mean, yeah, because I was sure that at some point I was going to be stranded in the desert and there would be no water. And
right.
So I knew which cactus I mean, dumb stuff like that, that you see from TV shows and Westerns and, you know, everything else. And amnesia was just one of those things that I just thought was, yeah, that's the first thing they suggest. And I'm thinking, guys, you got to stop listening to radio soap operas and watching these movies, man, because she did not. It seems very unlikely that she had amnesia.
No, it's funny, too, because it's like we learned all this stuff in school. It's like, can you teach me how to do taxes and budget, please?
Oh, yeah, no. Sorry.
For the love of God.
No, nothing like that.
But. Mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Yeah,
but also, like, I wouldn't I guess I wouldn't be so surprised if, like, they're seeing this all the time on TV and everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Just be like, well, yeah, it seems.
Well, yeah. Likely. And then it was, I mean, I'm sure it was radio drama.
Oh, yeah.
And movies, but still, I mean,
yeah.
I mentioned how many movies had that as a subplot, you know, leading up to her disappearance. There had been dozens and dozens of them. And so you were seeing that on a regular basis on the screen, you know. So.
And we had learned in one of our psych classes about dissociative fugue disorder, and like where people would just, their car would be found still running with the keys in it and their wallet and everything. And this person would disappear and then have a new life and be found like 2 years later. And I'm like, okay, it's very, very rare, but I'm like, I get that. But also I'm like, you were Walter White, you were making meth and you had to like break bad and get out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that stuff just doesn't happen, but this is such a bizarre story. But okay, let's talk about some clues, quote unquote, big swishy quotes. Mrs. Wilmer Smith heard screams coming from the school between 2 to 3 a.m. Okay.
Creepy.
Yeah, creepy,
it's
but
creepy.
Yeah. A woman wearing a brown suit was reported on Grandview Road pacing. And this would have been also a taller suit.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, exactly. You know, a tall woman in a suit. Yeah. Yeah. Young man and Ruth are seen hitchhiking on Thursday, May 6th. And a man claims he picks them up on the 7th, dropped them off in Memphis. As the case goes cold, the parents hire the Burns Detective Agency, which I love when we talk about them and the Pinkertons and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I do too. At least the Burns Agency had a better reputation than the Pinkertons did.
I feel like you would have jumped at the chance to be in one of these gumshoes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I would have loved that.
I think you would have been good at it. You just would always, you've been this like more silent one, just always writing. And I'd go around asking all the questions and then you'd whisper in my ear and I'd be like, there you go. Before I leave. Yeah. But really with this one, I think the most baffling thing that you've kind of been touching on anytime I push a little bit is there's just really nothing going on with her. Yeah.
Guesses. I mean, you know, nothing. And none of those sightings where people claim they saw her wearing her, you know, in her brown clothes and all this, none of that stuff was ever, you know, substantiated. And
sure.
It was all just, well, it might have been her. It was some blonde, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, how many blondes that wore, and when I say suit, I don't want you to think it's, you know, she looked like Don Draper.
I mean, it was
a skirt and jacket.
Of course. You know, I understand.
1930s. I know, but still somebody hears suit. That's not what you think of anymore.
Well, actually, that's the exact kind of question I'm supposed to ask on this podcast too. Yeah. So yes. Thank you for clarifying.
Because I mean, a lot of people wouldn't, because that's not what you think of when you hear
right,
suit.
Right, right, right.
You know? So, you know, I mean, so they saw somebody wearing how many brown outfits you think were out there and blondes wearing them, you know, and there was nothing that ever, you know, that was the thing that kept saying, well, we saw her with this guy. Well, but there was no one had ever seen her with anyone but her fiance.
Yeah.
You know, and so that just seemed odd too, you know, which is, I'm sure, why her fiance and her parents were like, oh yeah, must be amnesia. Yeah. I'd rather think amnesia than, you know, she took off with some dude.
Infidelity.
You know? Yeah. And, you know, it went off to, I don't know, 1930s. What did you go do? Join a jazz combo and smoke reefer? I don't know.
Memphis.
What do you do? So I don't know. And that's the thing about this. There's just there aren't any clues. There aren't anything to go by. She's gone and never turned up.
So. That there's no clues. That's what I was talking about. But I think the kind of tangential point I was trying to hit is that it's with the last person you would expect any of this stuff to happen to, or like there's nothing in her past or anything. It seems like, oh, this was a red flag. It's
right.
Like,
right.
No.
Yeah.
And so that's like the really frustrating thing. You said something that I wanted to follow up on. Can't remember. Anyway, but yeah, this is
amnesia.
Yeah, it's not just short-term memory loss from anything else. No, but this is, I mean, what do you do? You think it can never happen to you, could never happen to somebody you know, and
it does.
And it does. I don't,
for somebody, for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's like, she doesn't, it's not like she has a cell phone. She can be secretly texting someone her friends don't know about or whatever.
Yeah. That's why it would be so difficult for her friends to not know.
Right.
If she was seeing someone, you know, they would have seen this guy around. Someone would have
noticed, like if a teacher went missing too, or an older boy at the school,
right.
You know, like,
sure.
Yeah. They would be able to put stuff together. Well, that's all I have before I dive into other stuff, because there's just nothing to say except for I hope she had a good life and nothing bad happened.
Yeah, I hope whatever it was, you know, that she survived it. And, you know, I don't know. It's
we got nothing.
One of those stories that just does, there's just no end to it. So,
yeah. So, but for some reason, like, we've had stories where we assume something bad happens. We've had stories where you and I talk about, we really hope something really good happened.
But
this one seems more neutral.
No, there's no way to go either direction.
We have no idea.
We don't know if it's bad or good. I mean, we just don't know. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, that's the story. I'd like to give a quick shout out to our latest subscribers on Patreon. So, Troy, are you ready for this?
People have been
loving the stuff that we've been doing. And it's been great. And so we've had a lot of people subscribe, and I really hope you all are enjoying it and let me know. But I want to give some quick shout outs to Amy, T, Tammy, Susie, Brandon, Audra, Gianna, Diana, Diana, maybe, Gordon, Joe, Jim, Dylan, Donna, our family, Mayor Jones, Beth, Leanne, Jan, Susan, Yvonne, the Marx Brothers, Sue, Mono, Jessica, Ruth, Leslie, Jan, Reese, Albert, Dana, Katie, Amy, Brent, Bill, and Jennifer.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, this this new season of the Patreon podcast is getting a lot of attention.
It fucking rules, so, dude.
Yeah, we're getting great. A lot of new people on it, and people are sending in comments about it, reviews about it, and people are digging it. So, and actually, I'm having a really good time doing it. So that's it's been really fun to get to tackle something as big as H.H. Holmes with an alternate podcast. So it's kind of fun. So if you're missing out, and if you're not a supporter, you are missing out. You need to get over to our Patreon page and become a supporter. It's just patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. We have two full seasons of the alternate podcast already, and we just posted last week episode 2 of season 3, which is, as I said, H.H. Holmes. It's called Sinister. Actually, the only other thing I wanted to add was you have something else before I say, hey, don't forget to use the discount.
Ghostwriters.
Okay. Well, do you want to do that or do you want me to do this? Doesn't matter.
It's now time for our Ghostwriter segment. If you have a question or comment about the world of macabre, you can email us at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com because, Tori, this email is titled H.H. Holmes.
Oh, okay.
And it is from Aaron, and he says, hey, Troy and Cody, just leaving you a review on the new Patreon podcast. So far, I'm loving it. I've read the book, listened to the audiobook, and took my mom and dad to your last dinner in spirits on H.H. Holmes. I like the fact that there's a little more detail and side stories that weren't in the book or the dinner. I love the voices.
Oh, God. I've had several people say that. I haven't had to do too many yet.
It's so fun. It's so much fun. And I love it when you mess up and you have to do the voices over again. It's fun for me.
Yeah. No one else hears that.
I know. Me. As far as the audiobook goes, it took a while for the narrator's voice to grow on me, but your performance on the podcast is exemplary. And I love the sound effects. Keep up the good work, guys. And that's from Aaron.
Cool. Cool.
That's what I want. Okay. That's what
all right. So that went with that. So that's good.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, then the last thing I will say then is if you guys are looking for books or tours or events or whatever, go to AmericanHauntings.net. You can find all the stuff we do. When you are checking out, use the podcast or use the discount code podcast. And you can use it also in Cody's shirt store, which is AmericanHauntingsClothing.com. And use the same code there too. Get 10% off everything you order. So you are with a free podcast making money just by listening. So
two free podcasts now making that's money. True.
Yeah. Yeah. With the Alton one too.
Yes.
That's only 10 episodes though. So remember, that is not going to be forever.
Won't be forever. Nothing's forever.
That's right.
With that depressing note, this episode of the American Hauntings Podcast
way to go, Cody.
Written by Troy Taylor and produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. If you enjoyed the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Tell your friends, neighbors, random people on the street about it, college girls, and follow us on iTunes, Spotify,
when Stitcher. You're kidnapping them from their dorm rooms.
By the way, if you escape, download this. I'm not kidnapping.
What did you say?
I'm not kidding. I said, if you're escaping from this car, make sure you download this podcast.
Gotcha. All right.
I'm not kidnapping. This is what he says.
You're the one who brought it up.
So. Anyway, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast.
Very disturbing comments this episode.
Through the website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com. For more info about the show, notes, photos, links, and more, Troy's been sending me a bunch of photos. I've been building out pages for individual episodes. And
I've been
photos.
Trying to send them for each episode.
Yes, and that's been great. And you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or anywhere else that you waste hours every day when you're supposed to be working, studying, or operating heavy machinery.
We're operating on people.
Operating in any general way. We promise that we're much more entertaining. So thanks for listening. We couldn't
promise. Should we promise?
I think
let's say we probably are.
We
might want to rephrase that.
What's
one.
We promise ring, that kind of thing, like a promise ring.
God, yeah. Is that a thing? Okay. All right. Go ahead. Sorry.
We couldn't and definitely wouldn't do it without you. So until next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, so long.
See
sorry,
you later.
I stepped on your goodbye.
Man. It's okay.
So, see you later.
Oh man. Okay, so I'll cut out like half of that.
No, we don't have to cut out half of it.
No.